Let's talk about soybeans. I just asked these guys, I said, you know, it's been a long time since we talked about soybeans. If you listen on the air, we do it a little bit, but it's really been a long time since we talked about soybeans because corn's a whole lot more fun to talk about. So we're going to let them start by giving you a quick overview and their thoughts. We'll start with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. The rules for the road for the day are the way, by the way, I have to host three panels in the morning. They're all about commodities. I won't come up with that many questions, so you have to ask questions too. You can just raise your hand, and I'll bring around the microphone. Wayne?
Well, welcome, everyone, to our 21st annual meeting here at the Beef House. See a lot of familiar faces, and it's a lot of fun to be here. We'd like to we're going to have a looking at a great sharing of ideas and information today. We'd like to thank Dave and Todd for everything they've done, and I personally would like to thank all of you that donate and help support this program, because right now the way the government is pulling funds on everything, it's up to you to keep this government programming alive. And without all of you folks out here participating today and through the year, we wouldn't have that. This morning, our panel is to share our views about the soybean market. The one thing that I'm sure of this morning is there is great volatility in the soybean market. As we look out and look at what's going on right now, we could easily see a $2 swing either way, depending on, number one, what the funds do, number two, what Gaddafi does, and number three, what the weather does along the way. We've got a WASDE report come Thursday, and it's the first time in 11 months that we are actually looking for an increase in the carryout rather than steady to a decrease. So we're going from the average guess looks to come in at 142 million carryout, and we're looking at some tremendous increases by all the private expectations of the Brazilian harvest, and the Argentine bean harvest is growing up as we go along the way. So that's our biggest things looking right now. We've had a couple days of fun sell-off yesterday and last night, and looks to continue on to this morning. And we'll go on to Kurt, and he can get some more open comments.
Wayne Nelson, of course, you can listen to on the opening and the closing market reports on Tuesdays. Kurt Kimmels is with us on Mondays on both of those reports as well. He's with Bates Commodities.
Well, thank you, Todd. It's great to be here. And I'd like to echo Wayne's comments. I appreciate your support. It's a good cause. Y'all look a year older. Some of you look a couple more years older. I'm glad to hear that Pioneer's giving out the knife set after the meeting. I don't have a lot of enthusiasm in the beans right now. I don't think they're going over $25, and I don't think they're going down to $4. I think we've got a bigger currency position on right now than we do the bean market. But I think there's some potential in the beans. We can get into it a little bit more here as we go down the road, but I think our theme in what I've been doing all winter long in the last year is you got to look at the market two ways, one as a risk manager and one as a trader. As a risk manager here in the Pantograph, the Bloomington paper, one of the farm economists had a quote in there, I think sort of echoes what's going on, and it was said that the choices you make in the bad times that usually cause you the most trouble. It's the choices you make in good times that lead to the biggest disasters. So when you look at the opportunity we have, there's a lot of money at risk here. And I think if you divide it, whether you're a risk manager protecting your income operation or if you're a trader, I don't think we could do both. And so we try to come up with risk management plans. The simplest thing to do right now is to sort of lock in the floor, lock in profit, and go secure your financial livelihood. On the other side, there's tremendous trading opportunities. And with the boom in commodities, we put together a special report, and we have it over at the Bates booth, on how to be in the market and manage some of this volatility. But look forward to answering your questions as we go through the day.
On Wednesday mornings on the pre-opening market report, Dave Dickey talks to Bill Mayer. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign. Bill?
Thank you, Todd. Good morning, everyone, and I'd like to echo these two guys' comments. Sure thank all those people out there who contribute, and like to thank WILL for coordinating this event as well as all the meetings and panel meetings and commodity weeks and daily stuff that they do every day on the commodities. I guess just a few points on the soybean market to kind of give a general overview. And I guess the first thing is that really if you look at soybeans from a global standpoint, the soybeans are fairly adequate, really, from a supply standpoint. And they've, as Wayne had mentioned, they've gotten better, really, with the Brazilian crop improving, it looks like, as we move into the last few weeks here. So from the beans are kind of a mixed bag. From a global standpoint, they're adequate stocks. From a United States standpoint, they're very tight. And what's caused that is basically, if you look back at what's happened over the last 12 months, China's come in and just continued to buy beans very aggressively. And right now they're in a situation where the South American beans are actually about, I think the last I looked, about $20 a ton cheaper than the U.S. beans. So they're going to probably shift their purchases down there. But now we've got some weather rain delays in Brazil that's forced them to maybe come up here and make another round of purchases. So the U.S. situation is what the market's really been trading, I believe. And as we move into the spring, we definitely need to have whatever number you want to put on it, but we need to have enough acres, 78 million acres, with a trend yield just kind of keeps you at status quo. As we go further down the line, I think the real influence is going to be what China does, whether they come back to us aggressively in late summer and try to purchase beans. And for the short term, I guess I see kind of a sideways choppy pattern. And by that, I don't mean, as Kurt mentioned, volatilities here. I think like we saw the last couple of weeks where you drop down, test support, go back up $1.25. Now you drop back down, 30, 40, 50 cents here in the last 3 or 4 days. So that's the type of sideways pattern that we see. As I look out further, I think we've probably have some additional upside potential in the soybean market as we get into where these tight supplies that we have in the U.S. really come to bear fruit.
On the end is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He made the way over today from Lafayette, Indiana. Brought the old Prius, didn't you, Mike?
You bet.
Yeah.
But Todd and I have this joke on the radio that I drive a Prius because I've got 5 children. There's no way you could get 5 car seats in a Prius. So if you ever hear that, that's why we say that all the time. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Todd and Dave, thank you. Wayne and the other guys talked about volatility, and it made a funny comment on the radio coming over here today. Bloomberg was actually advertising a new website in between talking about the crude oil markets. And this is no joke, heartattackcalculator.com. I think I might put a link on that for my website for all of you, so go ahead and check that out. I'll put that as my home page. Who was here last year? I have a joke for all of you. This is a confession from the panel last year, and me in particular, about the negativity. Why did God create commodity analysts? To make meteorologists look good. So with that, before you run out the door after I get done talking and do the exact opposite of what I recommend here, let's look back at the price action in the market last year, because I think it could tell us a few things about this year. From, what was it, March to mid-June, November beans had a 50-cent trading range. So the panel didn't do too bad for the first half of the crop year. The dollar rallied 11% during the exact same time period. The panel was also talking about the dollar as well being firm. It was after mid-June that we really had the move in the beans. And that corresponded, in my mind, with the Federal Reserve doing their quantitative easing and also the USDA coming out with about a 25% decline in carryover from the December 09 report to the April 10 report. So those two things, if we take a deeper look at it, I think I would recommend for 2011, a lot of us have already thought about the 1988-type drought and a $3 rally in beans. I think we might want to look at the possibility of another 2008-type market where we actually have a $3 fall in beans. Price that into your marketing plan. To give you an example, we had a weak dollar, low interest rates, and the emerging markets were on our side that last year and a half, I am planning on those three things being against us or working against us in 2011. Thanks again for the invitation.
All right, a quick question for you out here. I want to know what you're going to plant this year and just kind of a difference. So how many are you going to plant the same crop rotation this year that you did last year? About half. How many are going to plant more corn? A few. And how many are planting more beans? And we had a bunch of non-voters, so we'll go with mostly the same acreage as we go into the coming season. Given that, and the idea that almost every poll that I have seen suggests, or at least that I've seen from farmers, suggests that they're going to plant pretty much the same acreage for soybeans. We'll start with you, Mike. You said prepare for that $3 drop. You gave us a couple of things to think about. What are the fundamentals that would push the market lower, and why is it that we would not end up with the same kind of stocks number that we already do, or that we already have? So why won't we stay as high as we are? Because fundamentally, it looks like it ought to end up with the same ending stocks or carryout, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a huge point. I'm not looking for a big drop or a big increase in carryover right now. To hold the status quo would be perfectly fine with me. I think the problem I see, Todd, is one of the big things that I overlooked last year was when the Fed did the quantitative easing, that put new life into the emerging markets. It gave China the money to spend on demand, and it gave the Brazilian real the chance to rally. And when you had both of those things kind of stack up against us, that's what really turned on the beans. I kind of see the 2011 market a little bit less likely to be able to do that. So that's probably the two major things.
Well, when you look at acres, I think we're going to have a little over 78 million acres. I feel there's going to be heavy double crop beans. So what type of yield do you put on it? As you all have heard over the years, yield moves the bottom line more than anything. But the one observation that's really stuck out here in the last 6 months is when you talk to economists and analysts and listen to what they're saying and read what they put in print, is typically whenever you have higher prices, your ration supply or demand starts to come down. When you project on out, you usually put a smaller demand base figure on your supply-demand balance sheet. That's not happening. In fact, there's some cases where demand is a little bit better than the previous year. So demand's not going away. It's a matter of fact, hanging in there stronger than what analysts have predicted, and it's going to come down to what type of summer weather and yield we have.
Wayne, as I think about the comment he just made, if acreage stays pretty close to the same, but we know that a lot of those acres are going to come from double crop, right? Last year, those acres were not double crop. We know most of them were not double crop, and they were first crop soybeans. That should mean that the yield across the board nationally might be lower fundamentally. Am I figuring that properly, and is that a good question to ask, do you think?
Yes, Todd, because first crop beans are planted timely rather than double crop should yield better, and that would be an indication
well,
to say the average yield.
It would get to carry out, though.
Well, that's, but I'm saying they should yield better if they were first crop than second crop.
Right, and carry out, though, would be lower.
Carry out would come in lower like that. The other thing that is affecting this market that could be a little downward is there's talk that the fund traders are moving out of the grains and into the energies. We know that the last $2 of any market comes from the funds. That's one of the things. We're looking at tremendously high yields or potentially high yields coming out of Brazil and Argentina. Michael Cordonier has been one of the best crop scouts or whatever as far as estimating that, you know, is saying that we're going to increase greatly in down there. Now, he's not quite as optimistic on the Argentine crop. He says they aren't flowering in some of them, so it's not punching up as much as some of the others. But if you would look at Informa's numbers, you could actually, if you take the new world stocks that he forecast and if you took the increase that he put on South America and the projected U.S., we could actually get up close to a 200 million carryout rather than 140 million carryout we've looked at the last 2 years. So that, you know, along with some of the funds unwinding their bull spreads and looks at the general economy, the cost of fuel, gasoline, fuel oil, whatever you want for transporting everything, we're going to see a little bit of a setback. And the last time in 2008, did we not cut the amount of gas we bought during the summer when it got to $4? okay, if we cut that, we're going to cut soy diesel, and we're also going to cut ethanol by whatever percentage we do, because it goes in at a 10% blend or whatever blend it is along the way. So those are a couple of the things, not considering the weather, for planting this spring.
All right. So count me as corrected, right? Count me as corrected, because I was adding something up. He wants to be more bearish than that. And I've got one here that is, where are you, neutral on the marketplace for soybeans?
It can go up. It can go down.
Yeah. Right.
It will.
Yeah. And you know what? He's going to tell you, you can make money both ways, isn't he? All right. Which is actually true. I always have to be reminded, but when the market is going down, that somebody actually is making money. Might not be you, but somebody is. Okay, Bill.
And I'll just add to Kurt's comments, it can go up and it can go down, and it will. A few things going back to your question as far as, possibilities. I guess one is, if you look at the forum numbers, the Outlook forum numbers, the USDA pretty much is looking at steady demand, and I think that's what Kurt was alluding to, is that we're starting to see the crush drop a little bit here in the last couple of reports, and it really boils down to the competition that I was talking about earlier from South America, whether we can keep our crush and we can keep our exports at the levels that we had the current year that we're in here. The other thing I just mentioned, I guess from an acre standpoint, I think 78, I mean, that's basically the biggest acreage number in history, 5 to 6 million double crop beans. Boy, with the wheat acres we've got and, you know, how many wheat acres we may get torn up this year, I'm not sure we can do that. But going back to the demand side, I think that the other thing that we see is that we've had 150 to 160 million carryout now. This will be, what, the third year in a row? We're getting used to being able to deal with those numbers, I think. So I don't know that that panics the market if we go into 2011 with a projection of 150 to 160 million carryout.
So, Mike, China tends to come into the market in the fall. They have. And then they start to buy, and they just continue to buy until they can switch into South America. So why would you be concerned about such a large drop, and will there be an opportunity to market beans after they're harvested sometime in November or December?
Yeah, it's a heck of a good question. The first thing about China that I've kind of done enough research to say, in my opinion, for them to raise their currency would only stoke their inflation more, Todd. So I think that's where a lot of market participants are thinking China's going to try and raise their currency. Raising their currency, when you define inflation, it's too few dollars or too many dollars chasing too few goods. And in their currency, if they raise their currency, that would even make it worse, where they'd have too many more of their currency chasing too few goods. Yes, it would allow them to import more, but domestically it would raise their inflation even more. So unless I'm just flat out wrong and they raise their currency, I think they're probably fighting inflation almost as much as the Middle East and North Africa are right now. They are watching foreign journalists. They are tamping down on the Internet again. They are not allowing protesting at this point. They and Saudi Arabia are quietly trying to quell and squelch out anything that would look like social unrest. And I think that's where these food prices, it's proof positive to me that the higher food prices do hurt the emerging markets more than somebody like the United States. And I just simply go back to the Tiananmen Square of 1989, and I think to myself, in part, one of the reasons why we had a Tiananmen Square in 89 was the 88 drought and the high food prices back then. I don't know if that's going to be right or not, but I think it's smart to bake it into the marketing plan. And when I've done these winter meetings all around the country, like many of the other analysts have done, I hear a lot about 88, but I don't hear much about 08, or I don't hear much about the early 80s and how we went down hard after 81. And I think that's where we really want to do that in terms of reflecting upon that before we plant.
Talk about the specter of global unrest. And has anybody got a question? Hold your hand up, because I'm going to walk out to you now. But make sure you hold your hand up and I'll come out. Talk about this specter of unrest on the planet, what's happening in the Mideast, what China's doing, what Saudi Arabia is doing, why the marketplace may have dropped yesterday. I did hear at least one analyst tell me that, hey, you know, the marketplace dropped yesterday because they're more scared about the United States' involvement in the Mideast. Wayne?
That's very true, Todd. We don't know how we're going to react when we come in the morning of whether we're more involved in Libya or less involved in Libya, or whether Gaddafi bombs his people, or whether we see some unrest in some of the other countries. The country that does scare us the most and would probably take steam out of the market would be Saudi Arabia, because that's where we get most of our oil, and that would make us less firm along the way. But it's a very big question on how we react. But we have seen the funds as such say they'd like to get a little more over into the energies and metals and reduce some of their commodity exposure because of this. But I think that all in all, as we look at it, the Chinese premier last week predicted that there'll be at least 5 years of great growth of their economy and continuing to want to produce and buy commodities. That is one of the very bright hopes, along with some of the weather people that are going on telling us that we're going to continue to have a wet spring. So there's stuff on both sides, but right now we don't know how they're going to react to the world reaction to unrest in the East.
Yeah, it can vary from hour to hour on what takes place and what the reaction is. I think we can talk about this all day long. It's something to talk about. It's newsworthy. But as a producer, I think we got to go back to the raw fundamentals, is at these price levels, our risk is to the downside. And we feel that you need to protect the downside, put a price floor under you. That way, if the thing does decouple and go lower and we get in a world recession, you've got some downside protection. If you're at profitable levels, it's very easy. Go ahead and market, sell. You're looking at a huge return on your investment, and you can replace ownership on paper and take advantage of an up move down the road if dry weather or wet weather would affect the marketplace. I think that it's worthy to talk about this, but, too, I think you need to use this news to your advantage because we are at good levels.
Appreciate you fellows coming here. This is interesting stuff. I've got a question for all of you, any of you, to contrast what we're seeing now with, I believe, 08 crop, basically, when we had the last big run-up. What's the difference, and is there something we can learn from that and apply it to what we're going through now?
The big thing that comes to my mind is we aren't nearly as tight on world rice supplies as we were back in 2008, and that has led us back to the wheat market not following the 2008 pattern like we had up until about 2 weeks ago. The wheat has not continued on higher like it did at this time period and put in a March high back in 2008, right in the middle of March, right about now. It put in a high in 2008. It's actually gone lower, and I think a lot of that goes back to the rice market. And that, of all things, that's probably helped us the most when it comes to the food price index. The United Nations keeps track of the food price index. The edible oils, though, are right back up to where they were in 2008 and maybe even a little bit higher now that we've gotten into March. So that's where I see the rationing of demand more likely in edible oils than maybe the feed grains, because the prices aren't as high and the rice stocks are more ample.
I guess I'd answer that from the standpoint of economic activity, and I think we're in a, for the most part, improving global economic situation now versus where we were declining in 08. And I think that's part of what happened yesterday that Todd mentioned. As the energy prices go higher, I think there's a linkage there as to whether how much does that hurt our economic growth in the world, not just the United States, and can that have a negative effect on soybean demand?
2008, speculative driven, wide basis. Today, supply and demand driven, narrow basis. Probably the biggest fear of today's rally, looking back versus now, is in 2008, corn dropped $5, beans dropped $8 from June till that fall. But the biggest fear I have is today's trader. Today's trader has $50 million to $1 billion in his back pocket. He's got a staff that trades 24 hours a day, and he can move billions of dollars at a touch of a button. And these guys can drive this market sharply higher and sharply lower, and that's my worst fear as a grain trader.
Another question for you folks out here. How many of you will buy crop insurance? for this season? They'll all buy crop insurance. The University of Illinois says you can lock a profit in with your crop insurance this year, by the way. You probably already know that. They also make a recommendation. I went back to Gary Schnitke's Farm Economics Summit PowerPoint display, which is still up on the website at farmdoc.illinois. I went back yesterday and I was looking at it, and there is a slide that says it had a prediction, I think at $5.1145 or something for corn and for soybeans, and it's $13.49 for soybeans. But at those levels, you can lock in a profit with crop insurance. His suggestion on the slide was buy more crop insurance, not less, and that you should hedge before you get to harvest. Hedge the crop you've got before you get to harvest. So the question is, they're going to buy crop insurance. You all sound like better protect that anyway. So they're doing some protection as it is. What do they do to market that crop or to hedge that crop? We'll start with Wayne and we'll go all the way across.
Well, Todd, most everybody out there is probably going to take somewhere in the 80-85% bracket on their coverage. The 80% revenue policy is the one that's subsidized the most in the enterprise units. So that's what the majority of people are taking when you look at the charts and what's going on. So you've basically insured 80% of your APH or your normal yields. That still leaves 20% up there that you aren't covered with crop insurance and looking. We feel that everybody should have at least that 20 to 30% covered now at the levels that were above what was at. Now, along the way, we also think that it's going to be prudent to, whenever we get bumps above the prices there, to be a scale in seller along the way. Now, remember that that insurance on your insured bushels, if the market does go up $2, $3 and you don't have a crop and you have the revenue policy, we'll pay you back at those at the higher price so you can buy it back from the elevator if you actually don't have those bushels, and it won't cost you, and you'll still be netting what you thought you were selling for to begin with. But all along the way here, it's still going to be a marketing year that you want to try to take advantage of, put floors under the market, because you're hoping that you're the good producer, we're not going to have extremely bad weather, and you're going to produce a lot more than that 80% of your actual yield.
When you visit with I visit a few guys that buy crop insurance. First thing you do is, man, the market's got to go down so I can collect some premium here. And it's a good tool, but it's not a 100% alternative for not marking grain. If you go back in history, I've seen studies where you do different marketing options using crop insurance. The one strategy that is usually at the top three year after year after year is to buy the revenue policy, market the crop before you go to the field, and at the same time buy a call option to replace it to take advantage of some upward moves. That strategy has been in the top year after year after year. So you got to use the combination of these tools all together to manage risk.
Yeah, I certainly couldn't agree more that you use all the tools that you can. We kind of look at the crop insurance as being the first layer of protection, and then you try to enhance it on top of that. We have some software that you can look at any conceivable possibility, and what our analysis has shown is that really going into the spring here, if you take the, as Wayne said, either 80 or 85%, that difference probably depends on whether you want to, you know, that whether you make better use of that difference in premium dollars between 80 and 85. But then come in with somewhere between 40 and 50% of your crop protected or sold. And that seems to be the best scenario when you look out at a variety of different possibilities. The next part of your market plan then, I think, has to include what do you do if you get this weather scare in the market and the market runs up and makes a spike. How do you... You know, what is your plan there? Do you come in and get some puts underneath the market, maybe some other option strategies like Kurt was talking about, make some additional sales with calls against it or whatever? So I think, to me, you need to have a good portion of your crop, once you get that crop insurance in there, somewhere in that 40 to 50% locked in.
I think all these comments, I hope you're taking them seriously, because I think they really are jewels this year. I will only add this, 55% of the time, 6 out of the last 11 years, November beans had a higher harvest price than February base price. That would naturally make one think, and this is something that I talked about at the meetings this winter when I did meetings with other people in crop insurance industry. It looks at first you don't want to sell that much, and you don't want to take a high level of crop insurance. But I would argue, and I think I would ask you guys to think about this, if we have a higher harvest price than $13.50 in this fall, I think we can all agree upon that there's a problem somewhere. Someone had a yield problem. And if you agree with that statement, that would naturally follow. Take that higher level, like Dr. Schnitke's talking about. But I would agree, like Kurt and Bill and Wayne were saying, utilize that higher level. If you're paying for that higher level, utilize that and sell and defend with a call. So far, what we've talked about, in my mind, has been big picture stuff. In the short term, going into Thursday's report, I think the trade has beat on beans pretty hard here. If you're going to find a turnaround in beans, a short-term low in beans, I think you find it after the report. And I think that 1270 level, November beans to me has a wonderful technical look to it, and you've got to hold 1270. If you don't hold 1270 on a weekly close in November bean futures, those calls you have in place, theoretically, that are protecting those sales that you're making right now, those you can take off, in my view, and look to replace later down the road, maybe after planting. I am taking an active management mindset to the calls that I buy when it comes to the re-ownership. And everything that I've just laid out here in the last couple minutes, I just got done doing a special bean report. Anybody wants a free copy of that, please let me know, and I'll be happy to get it to you.
All right. I did have one other question from the audience, and I'll ask that here in a moment. Anybody else got a question they want to ask out loud? And I think we may have to have audience participation on this one. Yes, sir, back there in the back.
I think I heard the question as far as options premiums go up.
The crop insurance is subsidized by the U.S. government. So the government puts in a dollar and you put in a dollar. So there, and the government's not going to trade the market, I think, is the answer. I don't.
Not that I'm aware. It was a question, do they buy options? Not that I'm aware of. I think maybe just to comment on your question there, I think obviously, as Todd said, the best way to get option coverage, if you want to look at the crop insurance, is really buying a put option, buying a call option, what you're doing. The best way to buy that is to buy it through the crop insurance, because it is a subsidized product and isn't even comparable. There are differences between the crop insurance and options, but they do have some similarities.
So I did have a question, and I don't know that the panel can answer this, but maybe somebody in the audience can. The question was about China and the size of their fields and how efficient they might be at raising either corn and, or in this case, soybeans. So she wanted to know if any of you had traveled to China. I don't know whether that's the case. The answer is no. Has anybody in the audience been to China and has firsthand experience? What did it look like? Hang on just a second. I'll let you talk about this real quick. I bet I know the answer. The question really is, can they raise more? Give us your name and...
Ken Green. I was over with the U.S. Grains Council and did a fall assessment of their yields about 4 or 5 years ago, and it looked like to us that they were getting about 100 bushels to acre yields when all was said and done.
For corn.
For corn. Soybeans, there was not a lot of soybeans grown where we were. Obviously, Grains Council does not do that, but Soybean Association does. They were harvesting beans with some mechanical combines like we ran probably in the 50s, and they look to be fairly efficient, and that's the way they're going to improve their yields on all grains, I think, as they mechanize.
Last spring, I had the opportunity to talk to the president of Pioneer Seed on the radio program, and he was talking just a little bit about what it is that they're looking at in the way of expansion in China. And the suggestion there was that the farm is so small that they have to repackage everything. And so a big part of what they were doing was to buy small seed packets. And when he said small seed packets, we're talking for, you know, 1 acre or something like that, but or less than that probably. So very, very small bags. Okay.
Yeah, Pete from Bates, at our ADM meetings who we clear through, they talked about China being mostly subsistence farmers. They are growing in our kinds of farming, but they said the last time we gave seed corn to Chinese, most of them fed it to their one or two hogs. Literally. And they have a very few people fertilized. I think the average of most farmers, they have 700 million farmers, I believe it is, and most of them farm less than 4 acres. It's all basically by hand. Where they are having mechanical and this, that, and the other is where they're expanding and growing better. But even when we do give them things or someone gives them things to improve, the subsistence farmers use it for other purposes.
Of course, we'll let Pete talk a little bit more. Pete Manhart, of course, is with Bates Commodities. You probably ought to be familiar with his voice. Hang on.
One other thing, too, about China, they're talking about expanding acres as far as corn and cotton goes, and that could be at the expense of beans. Then probably the most bullish news longer term out of Asia is a doubling of their hog herd. We're talking not just 30, 40 million hogs here in the U.S. We're talking 400 or 500 million hogs in China. You take 1.6, 1.7 crush here, you know, just look at the tremendous more amount of livestock there to feed.
China has become one of our largest importers. Will they remain that way? Can they bring up, and you talked about their hog herd, can they bring up their production enough to manage that hog herd? And really I'm asking about longer term future for soybeans and exports out of the United States, because we have competition from South America, Argentina, and Brazil. China has a lot of acreage. It's not as productive at this point. What do you think the longer-term outlook for soybean production in the U.S. might be? And this kind of goes back to the idea that once we had freedom to farm, we know that what happened in the wheat acres in the U.S., they kept dropping. Because now Kansas is what? It's a corn state. It's not a wheat state. It's a corn state. So it's sort of the same sort of question. When you look out, what do you see? Wayne?
I think China's going to focus more on corn production than they are the beans. They have already opened up their market to the beans. They're very happy buying U.S. and South American beans. They do not want to import much corn. That's part of their program over there. One of the big things that could help us especially, and it popped the market once, and then we sold off, and they didn't announce it. They were talking about lowering some of their import duties, which would allow us to get in there a lot easier and as far as a higher price level to go on in there. So that's one of the things that we're looking at is farther down, or just a little bit down the road, we might see them drop those import taxes.
Kurt?
Well, if you believe the USDA Farm Outlook meeting, there is no demand. If you look at the numbers, it's all flat line. Then plus two, the charts show we're going to continue to lose market share. And I think that is due to the psychology of the South America continuing to expand somewhat and taking over some of that ownership. I don't totally agree with that, especially here near term. You look at ocean freight rates and our competitiveness to ship grain to Asia off the Pacific Northwest. I think we're very competitive. Then plus two, who's going to be the more reliable supplier? You know, we've had dock worker issues in Argentina, and this goes on and on and on. There's room for growth in both sectors, and Asia needs both the U.S. and South America to feed their country.
As we wrap up, a final comment from each of you, and if you could all take up this question as well. You all suggested that maybe sales should be made, make those sales on a scale in. At what price? And we'll start, Mike Zuzulo, with you.
Well,
closing comments, too.
Thank you very much again. I think that the mindset that I have going into Thursday's report is maybe the beans can have another move back up and a retracement-type move up. I'm trying to balance that with the technicals. And again, that 1270 level in November beans is really crucial to me. And I'm trying to balance that with the idea that the Ohio River Valley stays very, very wet and we have an issue of planting delays or even replanting problems. And I was talking to Scott Williamson at the AgriGold booth before the meeting started, and we were talking about the replant supplies for corn. And I suspect, it would, based upon what type of acreage USDA is factoring, it's going to be tough to get replant bags of seed or boxes of seed. So I think we need to balance that together, and that's where I'm going to try and use the charts and the weather to do that. I guess the best way to answer your question, Todd, is if we stay above 1270 on a weekly close, if we can get a 30 to 45 cent bounce in November beans, start up again on selling. I don't feel any better about selling 50% of my production as I did a month ago when I started. And I think it's really interesting, and this is where it goes back to how do you handle the emotion. I am a chicken. I sell as it goes up, so my average price is higher, and I don't wait for a high. But on January 12th, November beans were at $12.75. On February 10th, they were at $14.02. On February 24th, they closed at $12.72. So this is the type of volatility that we're going to be dealing with, and if you don't scale up sell, then you're going to have some other type of plan to think about. Thanks again.
Bill?
Well, I think that we've tried to do that scale up selling as we moved through the early winter and the past few months here. And because of that, since we've back off a little bit here now, we're at a point where we'd like to just kind of wait. I would agree that if you get back up over that $14 level or so on the futures, get yourself caught up on sales. I guess the hard part of the marketing plan to me, when I look at those numbers that we can lock in, as I said earlier, with crop insurance and somewhere between 40 and 50% sold, there is no question you've got to take advantage of that, I think. And then the hard part of the marketing plan becomes what do you do as you move through the next period of time here, and if you get that move up in the market, that $1 or $2 or $3 move higher because of either awfully good corn planting weather that means we probably have less bean acres, or some kind of delays in the planting clear into where it looks like you're going to be delaying bean planting. I think that you have to use an option strategy in that situation. I don't have that option strategy developed at this point, but we have to be ready to come in and get some kind of a put underneath the market at that point.
Let me double check a figure with you, because I got from Mike a $13 figure, new crop November, right?
$13 cash.
Cash. Okay, cash. And you are at, you said 14. Did you mean 13?
Well, it depends on where you're at right now. I don't think there's anything wrong with selling $13 beans if you haven't got to the level that you want to be at right now.
I just wanted to double check because you were backing. You were.
If I'm 30% sold and I want to make an additional 10%, I'd probably wait for that $14 futures level.
Okay, Kirk.
That's a hard question because everybody's a little bit different. It's got different goals and objectives, different situations. That's really one to. I mean, I can give generic advice, and at the end of the year, I'll say, yeah, I picked the top and picked the bottom. But for the most part, I think you do a combination of things. Do what's comfortable. And I think you got to use some good cash sales and some replacements. A lot of producers, if it's profitable, just do it and move on. But I think probably my answer would be is I think you just got to put a price floor on unmarketed grain and see what the growing season brings and go from there. If you want to be bullish, I think you buy bean oil. Bean oil's probably got the most upside potential in the bean complex. They're crushing for bean oil. We feel bean oil could be bought here in this mid-56 level in the May contract. We feel over time, if bullishness continues, that bean oil could probably rally to this 65, 67 cent level.
And Dwayne?
I'd have to agree with Mike. I think if you haven't sold yet this week, you wait till after the report and hopefully get a bounce after that, a little bit on how the dollar will be acting and how the energies will be acting along that way. Also, we're going to take a look sometime, maybe I think the March 31st report will not show as many acres of beans going in, and then we're going to have weather and acreage things to look at there. One thing I'd like to share just as a closing thought is back in January, the fund managers were asked what was their number one concern or fear for the futures market. At that point in time was the Chinese economy and if they can manage a soft landing in what they're doing now, trying to hold things together, trying not to have inflation go up. Number two was the value of the dollar and its ability to maintain its number one ranking in the world as the currency that everybody sort of associates to. And number three was the oil shock. They said they would switch the number one and number three around now if they were to take the survey today. But those are probably the three main things that we need to look at when we're trading or looking at marking our commodities, is looking at the Chinese economy, looking at our economy, and then, of course, looking at all our transportation and production costs along with the energies.
Give these folks a nice round of applause, please. Kurt Kimmel, of course, is with Bates Commodities, Wayne Nelson with L&M, and Bill Mayer at Strategic Farm Marketing, and Mike Zuzalos with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. A couple of notes. We do take a short break after our next panel. It's only 10 minutes, so if you need to go, just because there's not very many restrooms in the building, right? Just get up and take that break. Cash Crane panel, if you can make your way to the front, please.